Vader. It's controversial to stand up to Nazis?
It is to Disney, apparently.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are talking about Spider-Man Far From Home, the second MCU Spider-Man movie, and we are going to spoil the shit out of it, so beware.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
That's Molly Glover right here.
And Nick Glover.
Hey, that's me. I'm that one.
And we are...
It's so muggy.
And we are here to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. So what we need to do is our traditional... Oh, no. Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yes.
That's the one.
It's home is in both names.
And Spider-Man it's going homeward bound.
Spider-Man no longer at home.
Spider-Man home time.
He's far away. I wonder if
Spider-Man Homeland Security.
I wonder if all the Spider-Man movies are going to have home in the title.
Spider-Man Homing Pigeons.
More and more confusing.
Spider-Man
anyway,
Homeboy.
This is Spider-Man Far From Home. We're going to spoil the shit out of it. Spoil the shit out of this movie. So if you have not yet seen Spider-Man
Far
From Home, go see it.
It's really good.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
I loved it.
And Nick may or may not have enjoyed it.
I loved it.
Yeah. Well, you didn't say anything yet, so I didn't know. I didn't know. Now we know. We all really liked it, so hooray.
You can just stop listening, honestly, yeah. If you wanted. You could turn it off right now because we liked it.
There you go. We all liked it.
Episode
Podcast
done.
Over.
Marvel Echo Chamber achieved once again. All right. So having warned off the few folks who have not seen Spider-Man Far From Home, by telling them that we're going to spoil the movie, mm-hmm. I'm just going to spoil the shit out of the movie by saying, as I've mentioned on this podcast before, Spider-Man was a big superhero for me growing up. He was kind of my favorite. I read all of the early Spider-Man stuff. I know the first Mysterio story very, very well. So, you know, when I saw Mysterio was in this movie, I was like, sweet. And I really hope they don't fuck up Mysterio. Which, honestly, they did a decent job of making me think they might have before they didn't. Even though when they got to the point where Peter's like giving him the glass, I'm like, no, he's fucking Mysterio.
Yeah.
He's Mysterio. You do not give Mysterio anything, Peter.
No.
Never.
I, on the other hand, had no idea who Mysterio was.
Oh.
All I knew was that he was a Spider-Man character. Didn't know if he was a villain or a partner or anything. Had no idea if he was a bad guy or a good guy. So I was along for the ride, and it was very exciting.
So were you were like, oh my God, he's a bad guy.
When he gave him the glasses, I was like, okay, that is not a good idea, just because, like, clearly that's not what Tony meant.
Yeah.
Peter, you're being a total like high school dingus right here, thinking that it was for someone else. I understand the interpretation. But I was like, that's probably not a good idea. Luckily, they didn't string you along as soon as he gets the glasses and then Peter leaves. It's like, okay, everyone, we did it. Like, oh, we did it and now we win. And and even then I was like, well, maybe he's not a bad guy so much as just like they're a collective of people who are trying to not be supers, right? Like that.
Right.
And I was like, that could be cool. Maybe that's maybe they're not bad guys, but no, he was a really bad guy.
A sort of like superhero co-op where it's not just one guy. It's a whole team that is one guy. That would have been interesting, but I like this better.
Yeah.
They could have been. And he has this sort of, I don't know, Machiavellian and justifies the means kind of attitude.
Oh, yeah. He's very manipulative. He literally manipulates what you see and hear.
Although he believes what he's doing is for the betterment.
All villains do.
I don't know about... I mean,
something.
He talks about it like that in the beginning. But once they get their hands on Edith, things change really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Not just like what we learn from the audience perspective, but also like he starts like, you know... pointing his drones at his own crew and threatening their lives.
You can see his crew is like
he gets real villainous real fast, not just to us, but to like everyone. And all of a sudden his motivation doesn't seem to be like the justice that he and his team were going for, his whole thing changes, his whole deal shifts.
Right. And what's interesting, and I mean, this is post Endgame. So they actually do a good job of explaining, you know, well, Peter's going back to high school, but there are kids in high school that were 5 years younger than him.
The one kid that they choose to show, the one where it was like 5 years ago, he was this like scrawny 5'1" kid, is now like
in a lower grade
is now like this like 6 foot tall, just like super beast hot of a young man. Yeah. Like
the blip, which I appreciate. Them showing like the mechanics of what happens when people come back. They made some jokey references with like the marching band coming back in the middle of the field in the middle of a football game.
Yeah.
Like some stuff like that.
It was a basketball game.
The girl who's in charge, who's the lead reporter on the school news channel, who's like
Brandt,
super upset because like she got blipped and like she's this, and like all these people grew up without her and she's not, she's just like,
they have to redo the whole school year. They can't, even though they already did.
Even though they blipped halfway through.
That is unfair.
I would be super upset about that.
I'd be pretty ticked off.
One of the things I really love about this is that it's something you see sometimes in the comics, and I really love it when it shows up, but like the group Damage Control, it's like, who are they? They're a group of people that clean up after all the superhero stuff. They're just like regular construction workery type folks, but like this is the necessity of living in a world of superheroes. And so what happens in a world where, sure, like Captain America and the crew are out there saving the universe and swaths of humanity and life are being wiped out and brought back. But then, like, just to the average person, it's like, oh, what an inconvenience. This sucked.
Or Aunt May talking about blipping back into her apartment and people had moved in.
Yeah. But, life goes on. You know, it becomes very mundane for people because, like, they still have to pay bills. They still have to work a job. It's just like dealing with traffic or work and that sort of thing.
Only in this case, it's dealing with losing 5 years.
Now, if this were a George Lucas movie, we would have gotten, like, a solid 45 minutes about all of the laws and the federal and, like, things that had to go into place to cover that. And there would have shown lots of scenes of the Senate discussing what we were supposed to do with the people that came back.
Fortunately, it was not a George Lucas movie.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
And instead, we just got right into Peter Parker going to Europe and fighting elementals.
This is my favorite
quote,
MJ.
Unquote.
Yeah,
this is my favorite MJ of all MJs. Like this, I think she is. I think she's amazing.
Zendaya.
I think that she is. So first of all, just sidebar, if you have HBO, you got to watch Euphoria. Zendaya stars in that, and it's a radically different character. And we had seen a couple episodes of Euphoria when we went and saw Far From Home. And the difference is they are the same age. They are both like high school sophomores, kind of.
And they're both like clever, snarky young women.
Yeah, but the difference is very good. One of them, Euphoria is a lot about the kids doing drugs and being crazy.
It's like Skins, like the UK Skins, not the MTV
but
Skins.
MJ is great, and I love that she, when it was like, why, you know, oh, I've been watching you. It's like, oh, why have you been watching me? It's like, just because I thought you were Spider-Man. No other reason, and definitely not because I like looking at you. Shut up. Like it was very good and awkward, and she's just so great. And I really liked when Ned found out that she knew, and he was like, okay. This is part of being on the SM team. Like, you know, like, you know, this is Team Peter, you know.
You're on the inside out. Now.
I've known for a while now. I guess, you know, I was the first one to know, but.
But they didn't do any weird, like, jealousy things or like,
no.
They didn't do any stupid subplots where they were fighting and then they wouldn't talk or.
Clearly it made Ned feel like a little bit less special not to be the only one in their age, but like not in any way that he was mad or jealous about her.
Yep.
Just like, you know.
Yeah.
It was a shift
in
their relationship and their dynamic.
But they handled it really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the kids were great. Flash
is always so good.
Flash mob. Fucking live stream.
Constantly live streaming, constantly hashtag everywhere he goes.
When he gets sack tapped when he's, he's got the selfie stick up and the kid runs by and just like smacks him in the balls.
Flash is a good character. I, and again, going back to the classic Spider-Man, Flash has that great combination of having no respect for Peter Parker whatsoever and thinking Spider-Man is the bomb.
Which is, really nailed that with this kid.
I just love that. He's like, Spider-Man's the greatest. What's up, nerd?
It's
the kid that is also wooing MJ on the trip, it has kind of taken over the role that Flash plays in the comics.
A little bit, although...
He's the handsome rival, the more like athletic jockey guy, and they could have had the new Flash do some of that, but like I'm glad they brought in a new character to kind of be that sort of a foil.
Well, and MJ comes in after that like a lot of that high school relationship that Flash and Peter have. I mean, actually, Betty Brant, the really kind of like the inside Spider-Man Betty thing about Betty Brant that is like Peter Parker's first romantic interest in the comics. But she's actually JJJ's assistant at the Daily Bugle. So they bring her in and so that's like the little Easter egg to Spider-Man fan. Betty Brant, awesome.
Speaking of JJJ, amazing that they're bringing him back from the Sony Spider-Man movies because he is the perfect J. Jonah Jameson. He's just perfect. And
it's J.K. Simmons,
right? A little bit older.
Yeah.
He's a little bit balder.
Yep. And just the fact that now he's apparently hosting some sort of InfoWars style show is so good.
Very because Fox News.
And it's very on brand for what J. Jonah Jameson is because he's always like, these supers who say they're protecting us, what are they hiding? What are they up to? So you know,
there's a lot in this movie that really ties in well with the recent PlayStation 4 Spider-Man game.
Oh, that's cool.
The white spider logo suit that he wears at the end.
He designed it himself.
Yeah. That is
using Stark Tech.
That is the spider suit that you wear. That's like the first spider suit that you get. That's an actual spider suit in the game that has that white spider logo that everyone hates because white spider. The role in media that J. Jonah Jameson plays is very similar. He has like a Alex Jones type podcast that you're listening to clips of as you're swinging around and as he reports on all your good deeds as misdeeds.
Right. Because that's what JJJ does.
They took a lot of good updates about the world. The Spider-Man selfieing and that sort of thing. Like there's a lot game that is really transferred over to the movie well.
I have to say, the one thing, there's a lot about this movie I very much enjoyed. I really enjoy that when he takes MJ web slinging, she's like freaking the fuck out because wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
I don't care how strong he is.
I mean, I don't want to say he doesn't ask her, but it doesn't feel like he has prepared her really at all. Like, for how fast they're going to go, for how high they're going to be.
It seems like they definitely coordinated that, like, this was a thing that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But, like, no, she was clearly not prepared for what it entailed.
I hate that whenever they show that in previous movies, MJ's always like, wow, yay, like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And it should be what they did with Zendaya like eyes streaming, can't breathe, like hair all everywhere.
I'm 20 stories like, above the ground. Like, the only thing between me and death is you.
Yeah, just holding me with your little arm. Like, she just recently found out he's super strong. She doesn't really know that much yet, right? Like,
What does proportional strength of the spider mean?
Parker. This is nobody.
Lois Lane flying with Superman in the original Superman movie where they're like all hands outstretched, all romantic. Yeah. It's like, nah, the air is thin where you are and it's terrible.
It's cold.
Yeah.
It reminds me of my favorite part of the Michael Keaton Batman is when he says to his Vicki Vale and he's like, how much do you weigh? And she's like, 110 pounds. And he grabs her and he zips up with the utility line. And whenever they get where they're going, he's like, you weigh more than 110 pounds. And it's just such a like, don't lie about your weight.
I need to know what
weight
you are.
This is physics, bitch. Like, this isn't the time, Vicki Vale.
Spider-Man doesn't have to worry about physics.
So Mysterio, right?
Yeah. All right, Mysterio. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal.
First of all, the costume is like probably the most superhero-y or super villainy. The most comic book.
Yeah, it's very much the comic book costume
we've seen in the movies so far, I think. Except for, you know, maybe Spider-Man, just because that's, you know, a Spider-Man costume. But it's so gaudy and overdone.
He has the little
Illuminati, like, all-seeing eye triangles and the, like, pyramid forearms and the full fishbowl.
Yeah.
And I, it makes sense because he's like this gaudy showman.
And he's,
it's, and he's from another dimension and he's high tech and all that.
Earth 616.
I'm 883.
Oh, he's from 883. That's right. They call this the 616.
Well, he's not, but whatever.
Right. Yes. Well, and so, okay. So, 883 is the, where Spider UK, the Captain Britain Spider-Man, is from in the Spider-Verse. 616 is obviously the prime Marvel world or universe in the comics, as opposed to like the Ultimates one. But the movie universe is 199999 or 159s. So the fact that they called it the 616 is a fun comics reference, but if they were actually correctly identifying it by its numbered multiversal identifier, it would be 199999.
But of course he can't because he's a bullshit artist. Because
he's a fucking fraud. Right.
The fact that he calls it the 616 is very funny.
It's very fun.
And at first I was like, oh, they're merging the universes. This is huge. And then later to find out that he's a liar was like, wonderful.
It's Mysterio, bullshit artist.
There are a lot of numbers, a lot of background numbers in this too. Like when Peter and MJ kiss, or when they're swinging, there's like a license plate in the background that is the, it's ASM something, which is the issue where he and MJ first kiss. There's a boat that has like a number on the side that is the issue where Peter fights the elementals.
That's cool.
Like there's a whole bunch of little, every time little license plate or a little number on something, It's like a Spider-Man issue that ties to something that kind of is what brought us to this movie or inspired part of this movie.
I liked there was a lot of Easter egg stuff. I liked the fact that there's just like murals of Iron Man and Tony Stark everywhere, which there would be, right?
Yeah.
They're totally, because the word's going to get around that that's what happened.
Yeah.
And you know, a few of Cap, but mostly
Tony Stark. Doubt it's even like the word's going to get around. I wouldn't be surprised if they held a press conference, right? Sure. Like, I mean, just to explain.
But the other thing that does is because in the MCU, Peter Parker is so closely tied to Tony Stark, it's like he can't get out from under Tony Stark's shadow.
Yeah.
The whole time.
And big iron boots to fill.
And that's the whole reason that he hands off Edith in the first place. That's the whole reason is he doesn't feel like he's a worthy successor to Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And he's spending the movie getting to the point where he can accept that he can be what Tony Stark was, but in his own way, for lack of a better term.
I feel like with this movie, after this movie and going forward, we have like a solid, complete Spider-Man. Like everything, including this movie previous, he is figuring out who Spider-Man is. And I feel like in this movie, he figures out his role as a hero, who Spider-Man is, the whole, like, I just want to be a friendly neighborhood hero.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. Like, now he's realizing like what level of responsibility comes with his great power.
Totally.
And that he's not Iron Man and that he'll never be Iron Man, but he's Spider-Man and what that means.
It's different.
It is.
It's different, and it's not better or worse. Like it is, you know, trying to mimic what Iron Man does or trying to be exactly what Iron Man is. It's never possible because he's so different from Tony as a person.
Oh God, we don't need another Iron Man.
I mean, really, like Peter is so different from Tony. Peter is humble. You know, Peter comes from, you know, poverty. Right. Peter comes from living in neighborhoods where he sees people every day. Whereas Tony has always been he's lived in like a golden castle since he was born. born. Like he couldn't possibly be Iron Man. And there's, I think he feels like, oh, I just don't have the confidence. And it's like, no, you lack his arrogance, and that's going to make you a different person and a different hero.
A wealthy, arrogant womanizer, weapons dealer versus a broke ass kid from the Bronx.
He just wants to make people's everyday lives easier.
Whose voice cracks when he tries to talk to girls. They're very, very different. And
the only way they're the same is
they're not trying to like force him into being our Iron Man replacement.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I'm interested to see, because of course the last thing that happens in this movie is JJJ reveals who Spider-Man is.
And it's huge. Like,
are they going to leave him outed? Are they going to discredit that? You know, cause the thing about JJJ in the comics that you hope they will carry through into the next Spider-Man movie is he fucks with Spider-Man and Peter's life the time.
Yeah.
Every time Spider-Man does something good, JJJ is there to make him look like he's an asshole.
Well,
and then Spider-Man does something where JJJ has to acknowledge that Spider-Man's not the bad guy, but he's still looking for the next opportunity to knock Spider-Man down again.
Well, and so I can't think of the name, the real name of the bad guy from Homecoming. But he's
the vulture.
Yeah. He's in prison and he knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
He is.
So like, even if, you know, like there's a world where I could see them being like, we have an exclusive interview, you know, kind of a thing. But like, cause some of it could be, well, he could try to deny it, you know, or he could lean into it. And I really don't know which way they're going to go. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do.
I don't either. I think the toughest thing in the MCU what they've done is really kind of avoided the secret identity thing.
Yeah. Right.
Most of the superheroes that had secret identities in the comics, you know, Cap, for instance, even though through Civil War, he actually gets outed, and so does Peter Parker. But most of the heroes that
is
had
Peter
secret
Parker outed in Civil War.
He outs himself when he joins Tony's side in Civil War.
In the comics. Okay. I was going to say, like, not in the movie, though. No. He's not in the movie.
Cap was out before Civil War.
Yeah,
The comics have retconned so that Peter Parker isn't outed anymore because he's more effective as a secret identity. It works better for his character, but
at least three times Peter's identity has become widely known.
But then they keep resetting the universe, right?
So a couple times it's been undone with magic, either by Stephen Strange or by a deal with Mephisto to undo what was done in Civil War. In One More Day, the whole... it's not a very popular storyline. But every time they've ever done it, it's either been controlled or undone through, you know, comic magic. And I think this time, my theory is, J. Jonah Jameson is clearly this kind of like Fox News type guy. He's probably thought to be, I don't think he has a lot of journalistic integrity in this world.
Yeah.
But because of the way they're showing him to be things that we recognize as not having no journalistic integrity in the real world. I think Talos is right there with Peter and abreast of the whole situation. And I think what's going to happen is Spider-Man's going to make an appearance with Peter Parker being there, and that'll be Talos or another Skrull. And I think Peter Parker ends up working for J. Jonah Jameson as a result of this.
That could be a good way to do it.
And so J. Jonah Jameson will be like, oh no, this was all, sorry, kiddo. Actually, you know, tell you what, you're a photographer. You get these pictures. Why don't you come work for me?
Give me video.
As an apology.
Give me some exclusive Spider-Man video.
And if not, as an apology, he will just straight up lie and say, I enlisted this kid to actually lure Spider-Man out and to make him show his face and blah, blah, blah.
I would like that because I like Spider-Man having a secret identity. I feel like it fits more with Peter's.
Time and time again, it's integral to the core of the character.
Yeah.
And I haven't minded them not having secret identities for everyone else in the MCU, and it doesn't really matter for just about anyone else in the MCU.
But it matters for Spider-Man.
It matters for Spider-Man. It matters for Daredevil. There are certain characters where, like, it fucking matters. And, like, those are two right off the bat where it fucking matters.
So, yeah, let's hope they don't mess that up, I guess, for lack of a better term.
I don't know.
They get other stuff right. So anyway, I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, same.
Big old thumbs up from me.
I think the biggest thing about this is actually the other credits thing, and that's that Fury's in space with Skrulls. Yep. And
that Skrulls were being Fury and Black Widow? No.
No, what's her name? Agent Maria Hill.
Maria Hill. Yeah.
Kobe Smulders.
The whole movie.
Yeah. And I mean, my theory is they're setting up S.W.O.R.D., which is like S.H.I.E.L.D. is the FBI, S.W.O.R.D. is the CIA. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
I'd like to think they're setting up Secret Invasion by showing us that Skrulls shapeshift into people, but I think that the Skrulls are nice in the MCU, and it's really weird.
They've changed the role of Skrulls, or they seem to
I think
to
they're
going to
tease us with Secret Invasion, and we're never going to get
really
it.
I really hope so.
But you could do, I mean, the Skrull, there could be bad Skrulls and good Skrulls, and Secret Invasion could be our good group of Skrulls trying to stop the bad group of Skrulls from invading Earth.
In Secret Invasion, the Skrulls that actually invade are a religious sect, a cult under a Skrull queen.
Similar to Ronan the Accuser, but a different sect.
Yeah. So there you go. You can still do Secret Invasion.
Could be good.
Good hook for setting up the next phase. Really good.
Yeah, nicely done. All right, so we got to get to five questions.
Yes,
big old thumbs up for Spider-Man Far From Home.
So I have a fun surprise for you two.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as I was going through our five questions, I realized that I was wrong when we were prepping for the show. We actually have five questions from a Patreon order.
Excellent.
At the top of the Patreon queue. So these are five questions from Jen Paulus.
That we have not heard before.
That you have not heard before.
I read them. That's all right. Like a month and a half.
It's great. This is perfect timing because Convergence was just like last weekend.
Yeah.
And these are Convergence themes questions.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Oh, it was like 2 weekends ago, but still. Okay. All right. Question one. What is your favorite moment with a past Convergence guest of honor?
Wow.
Do you want to go, Nick? I know yours.
I know mine. Totally. Yeah.
Go for it.
It was like 3 or 4 in the morning in Consuite, back when you could smoke in half of Consuite, drinking really good scotch that we brought with us and hanging out with Michael Sheard. And there was just like 6 or 7 of us and whoever his handler liaison was, who kept, you got panels in the morning. Come on, we got to go to bed. One more drink. And so Michael Sheard was a flirty, fun guy. And he like kissed someone on the cheek as like a jovial, not like an overstepping creepy thing, but like you were in a moment of fun.
Yeah.
And he said, "That's it. I'm not kissing anyone else this weekend." And I said, can I refill your glass there with Oban he was partial to? And he goes, "Oh, what the fuck? One more." and he was laid a big old kiss on me. And that was a great moment.
The number of people that Michael Sheard has not kissed at Convergence is probably smaller than the number of people he did. That's a good. I was thinking of a Michael Sheard story myself, but I'm not going to do one. I'll just do another. I'll pick another.
Right.
So the story I have is Greg Wiseman, who has been mm-hmm. a guest of honor at Convergence several times. He is the creator of Gargoyles. We did at our 10th year. It's sort of a Michael Sheard story in a way. For our 10th Convergence, Michael Sheard had always insisted we do a 5-day convention. Hmm. And we made it a 4-day convention for year 10, and then it's been 4 days ever since. But we said, for Michael Sheard's sake, he had passed away a couple of years prior, and he definitely would have been a guest that year. We said, for his sake, let's make it a 5-day con. Well, the way to do that is to hold a panel at midnight on Sunday night, because then it's going to run into Monday morning. Yep. It is now officially a 5-day con. It was called the official Michael Sheard 5-day convention panel. And we didn't even know what the hell it was going to be, but it turned into a memorial for Michael and other people in the fan community and other guests that had passed away between when Convergence was started and our 10th anniversary. And Greg Wiseman was there. And after that panel, we're hanging out, and Greg Wiseman was like, I was sitting there at this panel, and I'm like starting to get misty-eyed over people I don't even know, and that's why this convention's awesome.
Yeah,
so that was a cool moment with Greg.
That's great. Mine is, in 2018 Convergence, we did Judging a Book by its Cover, and we were paired up with Lee Harris. And it was the first time that we had done 3-person teams.
Yeah.
And the first time that we'd had guests of honor joining us for the thing. and we were pretty nervous because we didn't know Lee, and we'd been doing this panel a bit, and we kind of had it on rails. And as you know, Nick and I we are very synced up when we do improv together. It's very easy. We were very nervous about having this person, Lee Harris, that we didn't know with us, and it was wonderful. It was really great.
Yeah.
And it started a friendship that has continued that whole next year. And my favorite moment, though, is that on Facebook, he tagged us in the memory of the photo we took right after that judging a book, and said that 1 year ago today, Molly and Nick Glover decided to adopt me as their little British boy, which is just amazing. So we are now the American parents to young child
to young Lee Harris. Yes.
All right. Question two. What was the funniest drama you've seen in the CVG Facebook group, and what has been the most ridiculous?
Oh, boy.
Okay, I don't look at the CVG Facebook group. I really don't.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of drama that I've seen elsewhere that's from the CVG.
Sure. I can tell you that I saw a Convergence Facebook thread that was somebody complaining that they went to a room party, and even though the sign like said, you know, what was going to be going on in the room. This was like the first year they had signs. So I don't know if that was 2 years ago or what. But even though the sign said all the things that were going to be in the room, they were very upset to discover that when they went into the room, there was the stuff that was listed on the signs.
What the fuck?
It was like the sign said there would be alcohol and that they had kid-friendly activities, you know, and like other things. And we went in there and there were kid-friendly activities and there was alcohol. And it was very funny. And just the people's entitlement to, or like anger about being informed that a thing was there and then it was, is always, I won't, the most ridiculous, Convergence Facebook, thing I've ever seen was, all of the hoopla about my costume, but we don't need to get into that.
Yeah. Well, I remember last year, right after the hotel was announced that we were moving.
Yeah.
There was a big long thread with one dude, and it's always a dude. I mean, not true, but it feels like it. One dude in particular complaining about what they were going to do as far as getting to the hotel the next year. And people were like, well, you can, you know, take mass transit. Well, I'm handicapped. Well, okay, then there's Metro Mobility, but I'm handicapped. And it was just like, you know, everybody, it's actually way more accessible for somebody who's handicapped than the old hotel in terms of getting there.
Sure.
I remember that person and their complaints, and a part of that was the last time they had been in the area of the Hyatt, Nicollet was under construction, and the bus didn't stop directly in front of the hotel. And everyone was like, well, that construction should be done by the time Convergence starts up. And they were like, but it's not done now. So I can't take the bus there.
It was the most ridiculous amount of borrowing trouble
that
I've ever seen.
It's borrowing trouble should be the name of that group.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it seems like – anyway, that's
yes. Yeah. Nick?
Boy, there's a lot to pick up from. I think my favorite is more of a general thing than a specific thing, and that's when someone posts something that they think will be like universally agreed with or supported, and then like – like there's like 150 comments that are like, you're a fucking moron. Or someone's like, oh, fuck the Hyatt. And then it's like 150 people like, actually, it was a pretty good time and it was great or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like one person that's just like, I don't care for this, you know, this thing in Consuite, and this needs to go. And then like 150 people that are like, I bet you thought this thread was going to go differently, didn't you? These people that walk in with the assumption that their outlier opinion is universally held.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Question three. If money were not a factor, what would you love to see happen at Convergence? Alternatively, what would you hate to see happen because of an influx of cash? And I will go because I have had time to look at this while you guys were talking. So I would say that something I would love to see at Convergence, if money were not a factor, would be an expanded Consuite with, you know, more food available and like a menu that was posted that was, you know, that we stuck to, kind of similar to what they do in Valden, but, you know, with a constant thing going. So and we could, you know, pay people to have food service, you know, things, and we could pay, we could just like hire caterers basically, right? Mm-hmm. Like have Convergence be catered by several catering companies.
That would be badass.
Right. So that like we could have multiple con suites. They could be on different, now that we have so much space, they could be on different floors. We could have, you know, all kinds of that. I think that would be really cool. Something I would not like to see happen because of an influx of cash is I do not want celebrity guests that are like the ones you get at like Wizard World or whatever like, the fuck they're called. Like
Marina Sirtis?
No, but like anyone who's...
No, but I mean, I'm seriously, like, because Marina Sirtis...
No, because I don't think...
Panels.
That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking still. About like, I don't want Emilia Clarke to show right. up. I don't want to have to... I don't want us to be like bringing in a guest whose whole thing is she's going to sit at a table and do 5-second interactions with people for $150 a pop yeah. where they get one photograph and then they have to pay for a print. And then if you want to pay an extra like $65, she'll sign a piece of paper for you. And that's all she does. And she doesn't party and she doesn't hang out with people. And all they do is they come and they... That's what I don't want.
You don't want big name guests of honor who are there not to participate and
exactly.
be a part of the convention.
I don't want people who are there to be to just that the whole point is photo ops and you get to shake their hand and say I really love everything you do and they go thank you and then you're gone. I don't want us to ever move yeah. to that model.
All the guests of honor,
I don't care how much money we have.
A lot of the guests of honor there's a very personal
yes.
connection.
Yes.
They're very involved.
Yep.
If money were no object, I would like to see a pool of like 100 or 200 subsidized memberships for getting folks that have
POC.
A barrier of one kind or another from attending Convergence, especially if it's people that have never been to Convergence and are going for the first time, are queer or POCI mm-hmm. folks,
yep,
or low income, or there's an obstacle, a financial obstacle
yeah.
there. Like I feel like those groups of people would be it'd be good to remove some of the barriers to get more people to come to Convergence.
Yeah.
And
super magnanimous.
And I feel like with that there's a lot of different accessibility improvements that could be made. In that same vein with like if Convergence got like a 10 grand. Grant
yeah
just for accessibility and
yeah.
diversity improvements
yeah
like I think Convergence would use that money incredibly effectively.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit. They ought to work on that.
So what don't you want to see for no matter how much money?
What I don't want to see for any amount of money at Convergence day passes? No.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I've always been a big complainer about people asking for day passes for Convergence because I feel like they're not passes, it's a membership.
Yep.
And people that are there for one day are far more unlikely to volunteer and participate.
Yep.
They're going to try to get in as much Convergence as they can and get the fuck out. I feel like it comes at the cost to everyone else that shows up for Convergence and contributes to Convergence.
Yeah.
That said, I am willing to reconsider my steadfast opinion on day passes if it's for people, the previously mentioned groups of people as a way to bring in new folks. Like that is a concession I'd be willing to make.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'd like to see is, and I mean, if money's no object, I would like to see Convergence be in control of its own tech, be able to upgrade its tech.
Yeah.
Own everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Either own everything or be able to basically bring in the best of whatever tech we need. So, you know, from a programming mm-hmm. perspective, this year we had problems with some of the soundboards because they were different than the soundboards yep. we'd used in the past. We couldn't figure out how to record.
Oh, paid technicians that
yeah.
can help us, you
new
know.
Monitors
yeah.
for the people on the panel.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stuff
yeah.
like that would yep. be would be really awesome, but it takes money.
Yep.
Sure.
And we didn't even have enough money to put projectors into every room
yeah.
this year.
What would you not like to see?
I think what I'd hate to see is any kind of system where we started compensating volunteers with memberships.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Which is pushed for frequently, and I don't think people think about how much money that is.
Yeah.
When you think about just the ConCom members who would all be eligible.
But it's not even that. Then it's like... Then it's like, where do you draw the line? 1 hour of volunteering? 10 yeah. hours of volunteering?
Yeah.
12? Is it only if you volunteer before the con? Is it if you volunteer at the con, it's for next year's con? Like, and then do those people then, yeah, there's so many variables that it's just, it's nonsense.
Speaking as somebody who started the convention, and we said from the very beginning, we're paying for our own memberships, it really sends a message when the people running the con from the top to the bottom are paying for their own way.
Yeah. All right. So question number 4, and Jen, I'm really sorry that we had so many guests that we didn't get to your questions before Convergence.
Oh, well.
Question 4, what are some do's and don'ts for audience members when attending your live podcast taping at Convergence 2019? So let's say at Convergence 2020, what are some do's and don'ts for audience members who are taping or attending our live recording at Convergence 2020?
Don't eat loud, crinkly things yeah. in the audience that will distract other people in the audience.
Don't sit in the front row if you have an enormous costume.
Don't sit in the front row if you're going to be multitasking and be on your phone. If you're going to be on your yeah. phone, that's fine. Just sit towards the back.
Do take stickers and buttons, yeah. especially the Convergence like themed and dated buttons. They're garbage after Convergence. Please take them.
They're garbage to us, but hopefully they're
a token yeah. for you, but like yeah. we can't do anything with them right. after Convergence right. is what I'm saying. For so sure. definitely take those.
Do tweet us questions if we ask.
Yes. Do tweet about the show and that you liked it. Or, yeah. or that you didn't. Honestly, there's no such thing as bad publicity when you're a podcast. Just go for it.
Hashtag Geeks Without God rules.
Yeah. Hashtag Geeks Without God sucks.
Hashtag I'm okay with Geeks Without God, I guess.
Yeah. Hashtag Geeks Without God meh. All right. Question 5. One of my friends who attends always feels like there is at least one moment every year where she feels like, yes, this is Convergence. I'm with my geeky family. Do you have a good memory of one of those moments? Otherwise, a favorite Convergence memory in general, if that's not a thing you experience, but I think it is something we all experience.
Sure.
For me, it's always, okay, for me, it's the moment, and it's usually around like Thursday night when I'm in a costume and people are in costume and I come, or they're, even if they're not in costumes, they're in their geekiest shirts, you know, their club wear or whatever it is that they do to dress up to, you know, for their Convergence clothes. And when I come down and everything just feels alive because now everyone's here, right? Because like things have finally started after opening ceremony when it just feels like, okay, oh my God. And you look around and it's like everyone you see is a fucking dork. And that feels so good because it feels like, oh, good. I'm 41. I'm not really ever worried that people think I'm a dork anymore, but like, it's just, or when I see like the kids and everything and it's like, ah, yes, soak it all in. Like those of you who are going off back to small towns and shithole high schools where you're ostracized, like I hope this loving feeling of togetherness like buoys you through the year.
That's a good answer.
Thanks.
this year, the one moment where I was like, super felt like an emotional connection and for the convention and all that was during closing ceremony when all the guests of honor sang their goodbyes. It got to the double clicks and
oh, yeah.
Laser, who we had on as a guest, who they're awesome. When they were saying goodbye, they said, from the moment we got here, the whole time we had so much fun and we felt safe the entire time. Mm-hmm. We felt welcome the entire time. Like that's
the best.
That's so great. That's what Convergence hopes to be.
What convention can say that?
Yeah.
Only us, I think, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah.
Rare, I'm sure. But yeah, that felt great.
They also said, I don't remember if it was them or Aubrey, was like, I hope you all know how special and beautiful and weird you are. And it was like, yeah, they see us, you know, like, yeah, yes, we are word. Special and beautiful and weird.
Yeah. That felt good.
Yeah.
It felt like they got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's the hard thing is it's so many little moments, but I guess the moment where I kind of know that I'm at Convergence is whenever I do my first panel. Because I do a lot of panels
yeah.
and like sitting up on the front of the microphone on the dais and looking out at the people out there. And it's a lot of the people that I know, but a lot of people I don't, and kind of going, oh, that's a sweet cosplay yeah. they got going there.
Yeah.
And just kind of hanging out, usually with friends, getting ready for a panel. That's the moment to me that's always like, yeah. All right, here awesome. We are. This is Convergence.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Jen. We will remind you, listeners, that you can send in your 5 questions, and we will attempt to read them before they become irrelevant. This is relevant for Convergence 2020, but perhaps not as much for Convergence 2019. So check on back to the Spider-Man Far From Home episode about, 12 months from now, given when Convergence will be happening next year. So,
oh, right. Shit.
Send those into 5 questions at Geeks Without God, and we will answer them on the air.
We have a new Patreon patron.
What?
Charles Vrasper is our new patron. He was in the front row of our live recording at Convergence. I think maybe we guilted or swayed him into throwing money at us.
Either way, all right. Great.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Thanks, Charles. He's going to get to listen to all our episodes early. You could, too, if you throw us a few bucks a month at Patreon. Speaking of Patreon, hey, if you're getting those episodes early on Patreon... now there is an RSS link for the audio files, so you don't need to manually download the MP3s and then play them. You can play them right in your browser or take the RSS feed from that and throw it into whatever your favorite podcast app is, and it will automatically queue up all those early episodes as we put them up. You can find that on the overview page of the Geeks Without God Patreon page. It'll be on the right-hand side.
Also, Freethinker215 and Mayor Quimby Support Secular Coalition for America edited their pledge to $4.20. Blaze it! So, thank you, Freethinker215 and Mayor Quimby Support Secular Coalition for America.
All right.
I think we're going to make a rule about the penny thing. Yeah, I think. So I think at this point, we're going to say you got to do at least a buck.
Yeah, buck. Ooh. Yeah.
You've gotten lots of name announcements, buddy. Friend.
Friend. I will point out we are only $21 from our highest level of currently our highest goal, $150, at which point we will get our website redesigned.
Yeah. We'll pay someone to do it that knows what they're doing.
And we very soon will have another special Patreon-only
episode. Do we want to talk about what we're doing? Because we're doing it this weekend, right?
We're doing it this weekend.
We're going to go to hear the sound of Ek.
Which is, it is a religion.
Ekinkar.
Temple of Ekinkar.
Ek, yeah, at the, and...
there's one in Chanhassen, Minnesota.
The Temple of Ek.
It is the only Temple of Ekinkar.
It's the main one.
Okay.
Is in Chanhassen, which is close to where Molly and I live. And we're going to go there once a month. They do like an open, you can come hear the sound that is the sound of the healing love of God in the universe or whatever it is.
I got to say that meditation for me is something that I find supremely boring and I hate. And that's what it sounds like this is. So it's going to be, we'll see how this goes.
If
we record the sound, are we stealing the...
I don't know. I don't think we can record the sound. We can try, but like, I don't know what the rules are. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So that's going to be exciting. And if you're a Patreon supporter, you'll be able to hear about
it.
Other than that, if we spoiled Spider-Man Far From Home for you, we can't say that we did warn you.
That's your fault.
We totally fucking warned you.
That's your fault.
So join us next week when we will be spoiling something else. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Wait, what?
Aw, shit.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
Ah, shit. She, like, I remember, like,